listening to Ohio V, the World, an Ohio history podcast. The only podcast dedicated exclusively to the history of the Buckeye State. Subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Don't forget to rate and review us. Join the conversation now at Facebook. Now, here's your host, Alex Hasty.
Happy holidays. Merry Christmas, everybody. We got a little bonus episode for you today, kind of capping off Season 5 of Ohio V the World, our season on Ohio in the presidency. We're going to share with you today an interview we did on 610 WTVN AM radio here in Columbus, actually one of the biggest stations here in the state of Ohio. We sat down with our friend Vince Tornero, Wessler Media, for his show on Saturday nights and took up the whole hour. We'll play most of that interview with you today. But after hearing it on the radio, it really is a great recap of Season 5 and really my favorite season we've done of the show about Ohio and the presidency during 2020, that crazy year of 2020. But thank you guys so much for listening all season long. And we've got some really exciting stuff we're doing for next year, Season 6. We're looking to start probably sometime in March. We've got some exciting partnerships that we've got going on and some really fun episodes. It'll be more of a normal season where it's different topics every episode. So really cool stuff that we're going to be bringing you next year. And we'll have a really big announcement about the show here in after the new year. So sit back, enjoy this interview with our friend Vince Tornero from Wessler Media. Wessler puts on podcasts for all kinds of people, Pelotonia, the Ohio State Fair, Ohio Farm Bureau. They're great. A resource if you're looking to do your own podcast, and Vince is a great guy to talk to. He can help you do that and make it really great. So thanks again for having us on his show, and enjoy the new year. Go Bucks, and we will see you in 2021.
So you've been doing this podcast for quite a while. I mean, it's something that, I mean, regardless, I mean, we both know podcasting take some work, take some commitment. First of all, why did you decide to do Ohio V the World? Like, what was your, because, I mean, started 5 years ago, was it?
It started in early 2017, so this is our fifth season of the show. And I think why we decided to do it, I got into listening to podcasts a few years before that, but I was looking for a show about Ohio history and couldn't find one, so I just decided to create it and do it myself and try and do it right.
Well, obviously, with your law practice and a Hasty Legal, you know, it's one of those things where you're not somebody who's immune to doing some hard work and getting the research done. So do you do a lot of research with the show?
Yeah, a ton of research.
And this is you do a ton of research, but it's a hobby to you. And obviously, with your legal background, it's a passion, too. So it kind of combines both worlds.
History's always been a passion of mine. I mean, I majored in history. And it's an Ohio history show. We say it's the world's only Ohio history podcast, but it's really an American history show, and American history is something that is a passion of mine, hobby or not. So our fifth season that we're doing and just wrapped up this week is about Ohio and the presidency, and we're doing that. It's an election year. We thought it'd be a great time to delve into that. Ohio has 8 presidents, and we also did episodes on, you know, Ohio and debates. There's been debates here in Ohio, just like we had the first debate between Biden and Trump. We do an episode on the first ladies, on campaign moments in Ohio. There's been 6 Democratic or Republican political conventions in Ohio. So we have an episode about all those and really just everything Ohio and presidential history.
So I find it interesting that you reference Ohio's presidents as our saving fathers. What are you talking about there? What do you mean by that?
A guest of mine coined that phrase, and Virginia has the most presidents. Virginia has 9 presidents, and a lot of them are known as the founding fathers. And our guest Jim Robinow dubs Ohio's presidents as our saving fathers. So saving us from different things, whether it was Ulysses S. Grant saving, you know, Reconstruction and trying to set African Americans on a path to not just freedom but prosperity. You look at someone like Warren Harding who takes over after the crisis of World War I and the Spanish flu. He's someone who saves the economy and really in a lot of ways saves the country back to normalcy, as he called it,
But it's not as easy to come up with a phrase for Ohio's presidents, and he called them our saving fathers. And there's so many instances where I think that's correct.
Well, I think one of the things, too, that I find interesting listening to these episodes and checking out your podcast series, Ohio v. the World, is that, you know, with this president stuff, there is similarities between, like, 1920 and 2020, actually, what's going on right now.
Yeah, I mean, 1920 is 100 years ago, obviously, but the last time an Ohioan was elected president. And that was one of my fears, is how do you make this, you want to make this history relevant to today. And how we can look at history to help guide our future. And in 1920, Warren Harding from Marion, Ohio, runs and wins a landslide victory. And he's running on a platform basically that he calls, you know, America First, a platform where he wants to return the country to normalcy. And, you know, I didn't know what that meant at the time. He actually took a lot of heat for that. People didn't think normalcy was a word. It turns out it was. But, you know, like I said, he's dealing with a country that's lost 675,000 people to the Spanish flu, this global pandemic that he's dealing
Sounds
with the aftermath
familiar.
Of. Yeah, it does. Incredible racial strife in 1920. I had no idea how bad
Sounds
the U.S.
familiar again.
I had no idea how bad the economy was when Warren Harding took over, a huge depression in this country in 1920 and 1921 that he helps us overcome. But you're looking at pandemic, depression, and not to mention the United States has just gotten out of World War I, which is a whole other ball of wax that we're not dealing with, luckily, today. But 1920 and 2020 have a lot of similarities. I've always thought that a return to normalcy would be a great platform for a political candidate in this election.
I guarantee you there's, like, some third-party candidate way down the ballot who has, like, a Facebook page likes, and it says return to normalcy.
Yeah, he's running the Warren Harding campaign.
Yeah, like you know, it'd be interesting. You know, it'd be so interesting if somebody actually took the social experiment, took the literal playbook from President Harding's, you know, and just, or anybody, any campaign from, like, back in the day when, like, scurvy was a thing, you know, and you pull that out and run that.
Run on the Millard Fillmore platform or something like that?
Right on, exactly. Like, I there's got to be his handbook here somewhere that exists on the planet. You can pull that out.
It'd be a fun show.
Yeah, you know, so you are a fan of Harding, though. Like, he wasn't the greatest of presidents, but you do like Warren G. Harding.
I'm in the minority for sure, but doing all this research and realizing that Warren Harding is always in the bottom five of presidential rankings. I mean, not last, but really far down. You're talking there's been 44 presidents. He's always, you know, 39th, 41st. And there was a lot of corruption in his administration. Was it connected directly to him? No. Was it cabinet members of him? I mean, yes. And, you know, cabinet members of the Harding administration ended up going to jail. Teapot Dome, a huge scandal with the Veterans Bureau. He had these affairs that were uncovered after his death that really brought down his rankings as well. But when I really looked at him as a president, he was not half bad. I'm not saying he's a great president, but he's certainly somebody that I think in the next 100 years, when people actually look at his presidency, is somebody that's going to jump up in the rankings.
Who knows if that'll happen this time around, what we got going on. So we're talking with Alex Hasty of the podcast Ohio v. the World. Excellent podcast. And you're listening to This is Wessler Media right now. We're just kind of taking a look over the podcasting world. And this show, we're focusing specifically on one of my good friends in the podcasting world. It is Alex Hasty again, Ohio v. the World. William Henry Harrison, I mean, he's a guy who I can think of, there is a, to quote The Simpsons again, which I'll probably do a lot on this show, is there was Springfield Elementary, and it dubs in, you know, we are the mediocre presidents.
We are the mediocre presidents. You won't find our faces on dollars or on cents.
You know, it is a fantastic episode.
There's William Henry Harrison.
I died in 30 days.
So the old adage, it's just YouTube, you'll find it. I just wasted your time singing it there. But basically, the old adage is this guy did this inauguration speech, pneumonia, died. Is that all true? Is that legit? Is 100% factual?
So he did serve about 30 days in office, and he's the first Ohio president in 1840. But this idea that he did give the longest inauguration, that's all true. And it was cold. It wasn't freezing. It was cold and rainy. He was our oldest president until Reagan and Trump are the only two that are older than William Henry Harrison at 68. But he gives his longest inauguration.
How long was it? Like it was an hour and a half?
No, we're talking probably a little over 2 hours. So it still is the record longest.
But was it any good? Like, what did he have to say that was so
No, I don't think it was that good. I've read parts of it. But he talks a lot about, and we go in the episode and talk about why someone would give, like him, would give such a long address. But they're just like with our candidates today, there was a lot of people who said, this man's too old. He's not with it. He's not smart enough to be president. And so he would go into this a long speech like this to prove that not only is he up to it stamina-wise, he's up to it talking about old Roman history and the history of democracy. That's what really drags down that speech. So he does give that speech in the cold. He does give it without a hat and a coat on, again, to show that he's virile and that he's tough enough to become president. So, again, I know. So
I'm just telling you, as we've been doing shows and you and I have talked extensively in the past, I'm just thinking I hate being a one trick pony. But when you think about it, as we're reviewing, you know, Ohio and the presidency, looking at the election coming up, you know, it really just stands out to me like, my gosh, society is almost one giant broken record.
Yeah, that's one of the things I really wanted to bring out in this season is a lot of this stuff has happened before. So he did not die of pneumonia like everyone says. I mean, he's president for 30 days. You don't get pneumonia for 30 days. This is something that happened weeks later. He's completely healthy for that first month. So it has nothing to do with the inauguration. It likely was from tainted water in the White House that killed him through a cholera or some other waterborne disease that actually kills him. It's marked as pneumonia on his death certificate because that was just kind of what people said you died of back then.
Yeah, I think what's also interesting too on death certificates back in the day, it was like their cause of death was say if I fell off a ladder and died, and, you know, God forbid, it'd be cause of death, fell off ladder.
Yeah.
You know, like things like that. I feel like pneumonia probably was a catch all. You know, some doc is looking at his carcass laying there and he's like, I don't know, just the mode. I don't care about this. I didn't even vote for him, you know. I think Ulysses S. Grant was also somebody who was a very interesting character. You know, he was the next guy from Ohio, right?
Our second of eight presidents. Grant's elected in 1868, and he's like the first celebrity president, maybe other than George Washington. Ulysses S. Grant is not a politician. He's a general, but he is incredibly popular, probably the most popular person in America after Lincoln's shot. And he's someone, you know, we looked in this episode and we spoke with a great author, Ronald C. White, who wrote American Ulysses. We spoke to the people at the, you know, and that's one of the great things about the season is, and really one of the side effects of the coronavirus is I've been able to get every expert, every great presidential author I've wanted. They're available, man. They're not going into
the office. They got nothing
to do. Yeah. So that's been really cool. And to talk to someone like Ron White, who's responsible for, and you look at Ron Chernow, who wrote Hamilton, also wrote a book about Grant recently. Grant is shooting up the charts. I mean, I'm talking a president who was much maligned like a Harding. In the 21st century, he's up to 21st overall in the presidential rankings that were done by C-SPAN. You're talking about a guy who's marred at the bottom due to a lot of corruption in his administration. But you look at what he was able to do as far as Reconstruction and what he was fighting the KKK and some of the things that he did for this country and what we would see today as issues that they faced back then after the Civil War. Ulysses S. Grant was actually a heck of a president. And that's one of the reasons why he's moving up faster in presidential rankings than anyone else.
Well, man, I'd almost argue that dudes back in the day were way more rough and, like, probably stunk more and all that stuff. But these were guys who, I mean, you had to fight to live. Like, you know, we can go to work and, you know, get bread on the table in the day and we're all right.
Yeah, Ulysses S. Grant was, when he was not the general in the army, he was very unsuccessful in life and business.
Why was that? Do you think he just... Because
a lot of bad luck and a lot of he just wasn't a good businessman. But also, speaking of what you just said, it was really hard to make a living back in the 1840s and 50s. It was just difficult to do anything. And everything he did not work unless he was, you know, in the Mexican War, he was a great lieutenant. And then obviously our finest general during the Civil War.
Yeah, because you think about, too, like, when somebody is, you know, running for president now, it's so much easier. You know, personality means a lot. And I'm sure that personality back in the day, you know, we've talked so far about William Henry Harrison and Ulysses S. Grant. We're discussing the presidents from Ohio here. And you look at just the personality that would have to be conveyed somehow. So I would imagine, too, that running for president today, while grueling and you don't have a life for the year and a half, 2 years, or whatever it is, running for president, like back in the day, man, that'd be freaking rough. You'd jump in the back of a, you know, Conestoga wagon or whatever it is, a form of
transit.
It's hard.
I think it was so hard that the candidates didn't do it themselves. You didn't campaign like we do now. In some of these later elections and presidencies we'll talk about.
That's a great point.
You basically just had your surrogates, and it's kind of like, you know, like the Biden campaign is not doing a lot of actual personal campaigning, retail politics this year, but they're using their surrogates on television and in other venues. That was very similar to this, that you did not travel. Ulysses S. Grant did not take a train from, you know, from Ohio all the way out to California. It was something that you did. You let the party do your campaigning for you, and it was a huge difference. And then again, now we're looking at a campaign where candidates are not doing as much campaigning. So what's old is new again.
That's the voice of Alex Hastie. He's the host of the Ohio v. the World History Podcast. We are taking a look at Ohio's presidents here on my show. This is Westlore Media. We produce podcasts, and we wanted to invite Alex on the show to talk about his podcast, Ohio v. the World. So this is really fascinating to get to know the history of Ohio's presidents. And one of our former governors ran for president as a Republican. This guy, you know, he ran quite an interesting campaign. He's from Delaware, Ohio. We'll talk about him next in our conversation with Alex Hastie of Ohio v. the World, right here on This is Westlore Media.
So one thing that people talk about today a lot is that, you know, campaigning, you know, it started like 2 years ago. I mean, people who are going to run, I know the election just a few days away, people who are going to run in, you know, 2025 or whatever, they are... they're probably already getting ready. They're probably already getting their search committees, everything set up. And I'm sure people even 8 years after that, you know. So campaigning back in the 1800s, you know, it had to be a lot different and still go very long because transportation was so rudimentary back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, our next president that we have here on the list is Rutherford B. Hayes. And he, when you talk about Rutherford B. Hayes' campaign, I went and talked to the people at the great Rutherford B. Hayes Presidential Museum and Library up in Fremont, Ohio. And I'm like, so tell me about the campaign of 1876. You know, Rutherford B. Hayes, governor of Ohio, what'd he do? And they're like, nothing. He was the governor of Ohio. He sat at his house in Columbus, and then the election happened. Like, I think Rutherford B. Hayes' strategy, he said, and I quote, is sit cross-legged and look wise, was his campaign plan. Sit cross-legged and look wise. So you didn't campaign. It was actually seen... as below the dignity of the office. It was seen as, you know, if you did that, it would be a negative for someone to campaign. So
what was it? Was it a cultural thing? Why was that?
It was just this idea that you wouldn't lower yourself, that the president is not someone who should be out pandering for votes. So they would allow their parties to do that. They would allow their surrogates and other speakers to go out and do it for them. But Rutherford B. Hayes particularly sticks out. And a lot of people say that he's one of the reasons why people did start campaigning after this, because he did nothing, and he has this really controversial election. The Republicans were winning almost every election after the Civil War, and Hayes actually, a lot of people would say, lost his election in 1876, even though he does ultimately win.
What do you think it was, a Lincoln effect? I mean, do you think that, you know, Lincoln being a Republican, you know, emancipation, all that stuff?
Yeah, for sure.
Was there a post-Civil War Lincoln effect?
Democrats were linked to secession and rebellion. So, the idea that it was called, especially in this election, 1876, which is like one of the most controversial elections, the idea of waving the bloody shirt, this idea that shoot, you know, vote as you shot was a thing that was said a lot during that campaign for Hayes. This idea that not all Democrats were rebels, but all rebels were Democrats. These were the things that were being said. And Hayes still is barely able to win that election. And really many an election people thought was stolen. You know, we talked with some great authors and historians about that election on our Rutherford B. Hayes episode. But that election is a lot like the Bush v. Gore of its time. Hayes loses the popular vote and loses three states in the South, including Florida, where there were these contested votes. It's a long story that we don't have enough time to get into. But basically, he wins by one electoral vote, 185 to 184. And it goes well past the election day. And it's an election that I think will could possibly come up again when we're not going to know the winner of this election very likely on election night.
Yeah, it's going to be tough.
It's going to be something that could drag on for a while. And I'm telling you, people will look at the episode of the election of 1876 as kind of the first time that happened, and how the country and how the government and the Congress responded to that.
So I want to go back to, because one thing that we hear a lot about today and looking at, you know, this election and connecting it like you do a lot on this series. And by the way, we're talking with Alex Hasty. He's the host of the great podcast, Ohio v. The World. Check it out on iHeartRadio, any major podcasting platform. The program you're listening to right now is This Is Westler Media. Again, to know some podcasting around the world. I guess it is around the world if you get it on the internet. But basically, what I think is so interesting is the concept of electoral fraud is brought up today just like it was back in the day. How would you practically steal an election? What were the accusations against Mr. Hayes back in the day?
So you had Texas and South Carolina and Louisiana all had very close votes, and there was basically what they said was there would be precincts, especially in Louisiana, where his opponent Samuel Tilden won by some 7,000 to 9,000 votes in the original tally. There would be precincts and parishes in Louisiana that had more votes tallied than people registered. So stuffing the ballot. There was a lot of basically the idea that African Americans were kept from voting through violence and threats at the polls. And so these electoral boards in Florida, where it was a much closer election in South Carolina, was very tight. They went and threw out votes. They went and looked at precincts, and this took a long time. And it's a lot like what happened in Bush v. Gore, where the final vote count was different from the election night. And votes were added and votes were taken away. And ultimately, it leads to a victory for Rutherford B. Hayes, who was then known as Rutherfraud B. Hayes, his fraudulency. He wins, like we said, by one electoral vote. And again, a lot of that election centered around Florida. And so these electoral boards send in two different results to Congress. The Congress can't certify the election. They create this electoral commission. And by an 8-7 vote, the electoral commission, and we go through all this in the episode, a lot of political games played, but by an 8-7 vote, the electoral commission created by Congress awards the election and those disputed votes to Rutherford B. Hayes.
Well, I think what's so interesting too is, you know, you look at just the impact that, you know, Ohio has on the nation as a whole and the historical epicenter that this state can often be, because kind of recapping, we're talking about the Ohio and the presidency, just the different presidents and the even worldwide impact they can have. We've covered Warren G. Harding, William Henry Harrison, Ulysses S. Grant, who obviously from, you know, a Civil War perspective had a huge impact, you know, regardless, even if he wasn't, you know, president. I would imagine that, you know, his presidency just enhanced his kind of folklore even more.
He is probably the most photographed American of the 19th century. Maybe the most famous behind Lincoln, I think, of any American was Ulysses S. Grant.
Now, he certainly has it's just every kid, I think, can remember going through a history book and, you know, going past something and seeing his face in that.
Yeah, I mean, he was a great general, and it was, you know, before Grant took over that Union Army and the Army of the Potomac, I mean, it's very possible that we would not have won or had to seek a peace with the South. It was Grant's work that really helped the Union win that war and keep this country together.
Yeah, so before I forget, how many episodes is this in your latest season?
It's 13 episodes. We just wrapped up our last episode about William Howard Taft from Cincinnati. And that's the end of season 5. We release every other Sunday, and we'll start season 6 here in the spring.
Wow. I mean, how much, just out of curiosity, how much of a time commitment for each episode?
I mean, we interviewed, like I said before, I mean, some of the leading authors and presidential historians and people from all these museums. The research, you know, we're reading multiple books, and the research for this episode or this season was bigger than before. And I'd say we worked on this for a solid year.
Nice. I mean, that takes an incredible amount of commitment. And it's Ohio v. the World is the podcast. And this latest season, season 5, talking about Ohio's history with the presidency, doesn't focus on the actual presidents themselves. I mean, you cover other stuff in there as well.
Yeah, we talk about the history of debates. You know, there's a number of presidential debates here in Ohio. campaigns. We talk about even those conventions that have taken place in Ohio, the First Ladies, and some of the contenders, some of the people from Ohio who tried to become president and failed.
Taking a look at Ohio's history with presidents here on News Radio 610 WTV. And I'm Vince, host of this show. This is Wessler Media, where we feature podcasts from around the state. And what we're doing today is a conversation with Alex Hastie from Ohio v. The World. More interesting history, including the first woman to run for president. Yeah, she's from Ohio. That's next. 4 minutes away, right here on This is Wessler Media. Talking with Alex Hastie here on This is Wessler Media. He hosts the Ohio v. The World podcast. Talk with Alex about Ohio and the presidency. So no Ohioan has been elected to the White House in 100 years. What the heck, man? What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, we had eight presidents in an 80-year period there from William Henry Harrison to Warren G. Harding when he died in office in 1923. So we did an episode about people from Ohio who've tried to run for president. And failed, from John Kasich in 2016, John Glenn, who ran a great campaign, actually he ran a poor campaign, but could have been a great campaign in 1984 for president, all the way back to the first woman to run for president. Victoria Woodhull was the first woman to run for president in 1872. We talk about her life and campaign. She was I call her the most interesting woman in the world.
Why is that? What sticks out about her?
She, first of all, that she ran for president as a woman. Women could not vote, obviously, for another 50 years almost. And just her campaign, she's actually in jail on the day that the election happens. So the story of Victoria Woodhull, there's a biopic being done right now. I think it's for Amazon, about Victoria Woodhull's life. But she was just, you know, an amazing person, amazing story anyways. And so, we did one on the contenders. And you know, I can't tell you why Ohio hasn't had a president in 100 years. Ohio was so important to the Electoral College. Back in the day, I mean, you'd look at New York and Ohio. Those were the two states you had to win. Nowadays, Ohio is one of a few swing states. And, you know, the issue that we look at from in some other episodes is Ohio is almost always, we've correctly picked the president in 26 of the last 28 elections. We missed in 1960 when we picked Nixon, who barely lost to Kennedy. In 1944, very close by like 0.1%, we picked against FDR. And that was a campaign where the vice presidential candidate for the Republicans was from Ohio. So there's a small reason why that might have tilted in that direction. Every other election since William McKinley in 1896, Ohio has picked the president. And so it's a wonder to me why we just haven't had the politicians that have been able to capture the national imagination to become president in the last 100 years. But I'm sure we'll get one hopefully in our lifetime in Ohio and back in the White House.
Yeah, that'd be kind of fun. That'd be sweet. So how many presidents again from Ohio?
Eight presidents, which is the second most behind Virginia with nine.
So total of eight. Then you got, do you know by any chance how many vice presidents? I don't want to put you on the spot.
No, there's a couple that were born here. There's really no presidents or vice presidents from Ohio that are strictly from Ohio. There's a couple that really were more attributed to Indiana, even though they grew up here. We've had a number of vice presidents who lost, who were candidates, but I think we've only had one or two total that you would consider from Ohio.
So moving back to the back in the day, we got James Garfield. Do you think?
James Garfield. Yeah, I'm a big Garfield.
Why?
Guy.
I mean, so I noticed like you kind of have like this old school fanboy with some of the old presidents. James Garfield. Why are you in the Garfield Facebook club?
Garfield I think would have been one of our great presidents, and during a time from Lincoln to Teddy Roosevelt, first of all, there's a lot of Ohio presidents, and there's a lot of forgettable presidents. Garfield is shot and killed just a few months into his campaign, but one of the smartest guys to ever run for president. And we talk with an author, Candace Millard. She's a great best-selling author who wrote the book Destiny of the Republic, which I would tell anyone listening here to go read. Candace Millard's Destiny of the Republic, which is a best-selling book from 2011. She talks about, and she's on our episode, James Garfield versus the World, just how great of a president he could have become. His story about how he dies is so interesting. He's shot by a deranged office seeker, a guy who Garfield did not want to give a job because he was insane and didn't deserve. He wanted to be the ambassador to France, which is, you know, one of the highest positions. The guy had no qualifications. He gets angry with Garfield because of it, shoots him at the train station. Garfield lingers for months, and the story of, you know, there's appearances by people like Alexander Graham Bell, who creates a metal detector to try and find the bullets that were in President Garfield. And really, Garfield is not killed so much by the bullets. He's killed by the medical care that he receives in the White House. They're probing around with dirty fingers for the bullet. It changed medicine, his death, the way that his body deteriorated, and it was all because of the way that he was cared for by his doctors. His body became so riddled with infection. And he was a younger president, very strong. The fact that he held on for 3 months, which was also as long as he was in office before he was shot, it's an incredible story. So, like I said, our Garfield episode is one of the ones I'm most proud of.
Absolutely. I mean, with the level of work you do into it, you should be. Benjamin Harrison, some interesting parallels that I've heard between the current COVID situation and how he handled the pandemic back in the day with cholera.
Yeah, well, Benjamin Harrison's kind of the quintessential bearded president. There's this period, like I said, from Lincoln to TR, where almost every Garfield had a giant beard. Rutherford B. Hayes, beard. Grover Cleveland, mustache, but it still counts. But these are some of these more, overlooked and underrated presidents. And Benjamin Harrison was one from Ohio, the grandson of William Henry Harrison, grew up in the Cincinnati area, went to Miami University. It's also shared he lived his adult life in Indianapolis. But Harrison becomes president. He's one that I had to do a lot of research on because I didn't know anything about our 23rd president, the Michael Jordan of presidents, Benjamin Harrison. But we learned a great story about the cholera scare of 1892. When he's president, there's this cholera epidemic that's ravaged Asia and Europe, and there's a ship coming in from Germany full of Eastern Europeans. The ship is riddled with this cholera, and it's held in the port city or in the port of New York City. And Harrison jumps to action to try and keep this pandemic that's you know, like I said, raging across the world from coming into America. And he keeps this ship off at shore, and he institutes a national quarantine. He stops all immigration, and not that it was constitutional what he was doing, but a really cool story. We had no idea about the cholera scare of 1892 and how, you know, the strong federal leadership really made a difference. There is no cholera epidemic of 1892 in America due to Benjamin Harrison.
But it's still, again, I just come back to the fact that there's so much parallel between what we face today and what has been faced yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, so everyone says, well, this is unprecedented. No, this has never happened. You hear that so much in the last few years.
Unprecedented for us.
Yeah, exactly. There's so many parallels. And this season, we really try to delve into those and bring those out. And I think the Harrison and the cholera epidemic is one of those examples.
And we got William McKinley as well, and he was somebody who did a lot of great stuff. I mean, he's pretty popular.
William McKinley's the highest-rated Ohio president. The winner of the Spanish-American War. He's the one who we call him the architect of the American century, our guest does. But William McKinley is my favorite Ohio president. And again, someone who is incredibly popular, and again, an Ohio president who dies in office.
Is it with Ohio presidents dying in office?
They all died for different reasons. Harrison dies really of old age and disease from water in the White House, we believe. Garfield's killed by a deranged office seeker. Harding dies of a heart attack in San Francisco. Four of the eight presidents who've died in office were Ohioans. McKinley is killed by an anarchist. And so many world leaders at the turn of the century were killed by anarchists. But McKinley turns around the economy from the Panic of 1893. And also vaults America to this American century, winning the Spanish-American War and really making America a player on the world stage. Definitely a president that is overlooked, even though he is still pretty highly rated.
So final pres from Ohio, we're going to look at Taft. And the big question about his presidency, and he was a portly fellow, did he get stuck in the bathtub? Is that true?
He did not. I'm a big fan of William Howard Taft, Cincinnati. He did not get stuck in the bathtub. That's an uncorroborated story from a book in the 1930s from a White House butler that had a lot of other untrue things in it. He did overflow a bathtub once in a hotel in New Jersey in 1915. It's kind of a famous Taft story, but definitely an overlooked president. William Howard Taft, a one-term president in 1909 to 1913. Definitely someone. Our latest episode's about Taft, so we ask you to go listen to that one. He did a lot of stuff and was also the Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court.
To learn more about that man's podcast, it's Alex Hastie. Look for Ohio v. The World on all major podcasting platforms. My name is Vince Tornero, president and executive producer of Westlore Media. Thanks for listening today. We'll talk to you next week right here on 610 WTVN.
In a world infatuated with comic fandom, comes a show to help us remember the talents that have inspired us.
Whoa, cut.
Oh, come on, it wasn't that bad.
It's a bit dramatic. Let's just tell them about the show, guys.
We are the Canned Air Podcast.
Join us weekly for a comedic trip through pop culture.
We also welcome some cool comic creators, as well as some of the voice and screen actors that helped shape your childhood.
Find us on CannedAirPodcast.com and on the Evergreen Podcast Network.